Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding about their careers, and we talk about the history of the sport. And today, our special guest is Steve Davis. And Steve was sort of a disciple of Frank Zane, and he patterned his physique to look a lot like Frank Zane. And Steve competed in the 1970s and also the early 1980s. And I remember Steve from when I was a kid reading the magazines. Muscle Builder magazine had an ad of Steve, and it was one of the first before and after pictures I ever saw of a bodybuilder. And Steve had a before picture of him as a bulked up football player in high school. And he went from that to a totally different type of physique where he was very symmetrical and ripped and even thinner. And he looked like he went from an endomorph more to like a mesoectomorph. So it was really amazing. But Steve had a really great physique. And you're really going to love this interview because he talks about so many memories he has from when he was younger and competing, including training at Vince's gym when he was only a teenager. He's got some great stories about that. And then also training with Frank Zane and starring in a movie. Actually, the movie never really got made, but Frank Zane was making a very small movie called Sagan in the summer of 1977 before he won his first Mr. Olympia contest. And I totally forgot that Steve was a part of that movie. So he talks about that. He also talks about competing in the Mr. Olympia contest in 1979 with Frank Zane. And he also competed in 1981, which was the contest that Franco Colombo won. So got a really, really great conversation with Steve Davis. I really enjoyed this interview. You guys are going to love it. I do want to mention that we are brought to you by Old School Labs. And I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in the Masters division. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion. And Breon was also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 when you go to oldschoollabs.com. And you will get 12% off your order, or you can make your order at Amazon.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And Old School Labs also released another video this week from when I took my trip over to Venice, California on Memorial Day weekend and went to Gold's Gym. And this interview is with Jerome Hollywood Ferguson, who has been a real staple at Gold's Gym, and he was also at World's Gym. He was a good friend of Joe Gold. So we've got a really good interview. So that is on Old School Labs' YouTube channel. So check that out when you get a chance. And also the Lee Labrada video that I put up last week is still on YouTube. So check that out if you haven't. This will be part three of our video interview with Lee Labrada. And this was the last part of the interview. And in this interview, Lee talks about 1992. That's where the interview picks up, where Lee was competing in the 1992 Mr. Olympia contest against Dorian Yates, and he took third place in that contest, but he really improved his physique that year. And we also talk about Lee competing in 1993 against Flex Wheeler and Paul Dillette at the Pro Ironman and also the Arnold Classic, and then his last Olympia appearance, which was later that year in 93, and then his final competition against Mike Francois and also Flex Wheeler again. So we've got a really good interview with Lee and some really good posing demonstrations or video clips, I should say, from the competitions he entered. So check that out when you get a chance. That is on my YouTube channel. It is also on bodybuildinglegendshow.com, which is our official website. All right, so this was a crazy week in the world. We had the midterm elections on Tuesday, so I hope everyone got a chance to go out and vote. I voted out here in Tampa, Florida, and I believe they're going to be doing a recount for the governor out here in Florida. I just heard the news today as I'm filming this. And so it was a crazy election, but a lot of people are really involved in voting now, so the Democrats are now running the House of Representatives, but the Republicans are still running the Senate. So we only got the presidential elections coming up in two more years already. So, and there were some real tragedies in California this week. Thousand Oaks had a mass shooting. I believe 11 people got killed, including a deputy. And then just yesterday, or the day before yesterday, and yesterday, and I think even today, they had this massive fire in Malibu, California. I believe like 60 or 70,000 acres have been destroyed, many homes. They've already lost some lives. So it's just really, really a bad disaster out there in California. They have more and more problems with those fires every year. I swear to God, it's just unbelievable. As far as what I'm doing, I am heading off to Chicago tomorrow for my photo shoot. I've been dieting for this for a long time. I actually started my diet right around January 1st, but I really wasn't following that strict. So there were months at a time where I wasn't really changing. I was, you know, pretty much staying the same. Even though I was kind of on the diet, I was just cheating too much. But I think right around the time I went to the Olympia, when I got back from the Olympia, that's when I decided I'm going to get really serious and get this thing going. And so I've been really hitting it hard now for 2 months. No cheating on the diet, no cookies. So I've been really hitting it hard. And I'm about 200 pounds now, and I'm pretty happy with the way I look. I'm not super shredded. I wanted to get a little more ripped, but I am not really done with the diet yet. I'm going to keep going for a couple more weeks until Thanksgiving, and I'm going to shoot with my friend Rick Schaff. We're going to do some video shoots and also some pictures the following week after I get back from my photo shoot. So I've got another week to dial it in even a little bit more after this photo shoot with Tony Mitchell in Chicago. And then the week after that, I'm going to be heading out to the Bahamas, which will be the week of Thanksgiving. And I'm going to be going out there and doing a seminar on fitness and nutrition for the firemen and the police department out there in St. Thomas in the Bahamas. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be really a lot of fun. And I will be, I think I'll be off my diet or no, I'll still be on my diet. And then Thanksgiving will be the end of the diet. And then I will gear up for December and start my power cycle of my MP6 workout. If you guys are interested in learning about that, you can just go to Amazon or email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will send you a book, the MP6 workout, which is my training program that I follow consistently, where I have power cycles and mass cycles, and I just alternate them to build up my size. Now, as I said before, last week I'm going to stay leaner this time and probably shoot for the NPC Florida State next August. I'm going to see what kind of progress I can make. Now that I'm in shape, I'm going to stay in shape. I'm not going to stay this ripped, of course, and I'm not going to diet this hard because I can't even function. But I will slowly increase my calories and stay definitely leaner than I was last year and see if I can see the progress as I'm making it, especially with my weak points, and then try to compete again. So I'm psyched after this diet. I'm ready to keep going with it. So it's good to go on a diet like this, even though it's hard. It does psych you up and motivate you more, and that's what it did for me. So even in my age, my old age, I'm ready to keep going with it and make some improvements and see how much better I can look next year. All right, before we get to our interview with Steve Davis, I also want to mention we're brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. They have competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call. So visit their website at flalternativemeds.com. Or you can call their office in Tampa at 813-922-8939. And again, their website is flalternativemeds.com. Mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you will get a free consultation. You'll also get 20% off your first order. All right, so that is our opening, and here is our interview with Steve Davis, a great bodybuilder from the 1970s and 80s. You're really going to enjoy this interview. Here you go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest this week. His name is Mr. Steve Davis, and Steve was along the lines of Frank Zane, and he competed in the 1970s and 1980s, so we're very happy to have him on the line. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. I appreciate you being on the show. Well, Steve, let's talk about how you got into bodybuilding. We'll start from the very beginning. You just mentioned off the air that Vince Gironda and Frank Zane were both big influences in your bodybuilding career. So what got you started to start lifting weights and then eventually competing in bodybuilding?
Well, I went to high school in Burbank, and my father was a stuntman in the studios. I graduated from high school in 65, so like in 1962... 63, my father used to take my sister and I to Hollywood, and there was a magazine rack on Cahuenga Boulevard, and he would be looking at magazines about photography, and I snuck down and saw Strength and Health and the small little yellow Iron Man, and I think in those it was Muscle Builder.
And, yeah, Muscle Builder Power.
I said to myself, yeah, that's kind of interesting. And then sometime in my junior year, I saw a movie with Steve Reeves, and I was playing baseball and football in high school and weight training in the off season. And I saw a movie with Steve Reeves come riding in out of the rain into a thatched hut, and he took off his shirt, and I went, holy mackerel. That's the way, forget about the fact that he was, you know, as handsome as John Derrick, but that, you know, that's the way an athlete should look.
Right.
So my mother bought me a bench and a 6-foot bar and 4 25-pound plates. And I got serious in the garage after I did my homework. And then in my senior year, my mom and dad decided to get a divorce. Now that's a big deal back in the 60s. I went to the same high school that Ron Howard went to and Tim Madison, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And the idea that your parents were going to get a divorce was like, you know, off the charts. So my father said to me, he said, is there anything I can do for you before I leave and go move in with my new girlfriend? And I said, I would like a membership to Vince's gym. And in those days, 64, early 65, it was $50 a year.
Wow.
So he gave me the money, and I joined. And I walked in one day, and I had my money in my hand, and I said, I'd like to join. And Vince was sitting behind the desk, and he said to me, okay, it's $50, filled out the paperwork, and he said, now I'm going to tell you something right now. This is my sandbox, and you know, you either do what I say or you're out. I said, hey, no problem. I just want to train here.
Yeah.
So I joined, and it all started. I remember, now, mind you, I went there after school, so 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and this was in 65. So figure April of 65.
Okay.
And guess who was in there at 4:30 working out? Well, Mr. Larry Scott, our first Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
So when I watched him start with 100-pound dumbbells and do Scott dumbbell presses from 100 all the way down to the 10s, my jaw fell. I went, holy, I mean, and his deltoids were the size of most people's heads.
Wow,
so
amazing.
I had the pleasure of working out next to Larry, never trained with him, and never really had a training partner. But I can, you know, I know that routine of his backwards and forwards, and I, to be honest with you, I guess I copied everything he did. And then there was John Tristram, Don Holworth, you know, so here I was, 16-year-old kid in the middle of wow. And I remember one evening in May, this big tall Austrian came in to show to meet Vince, and I don't have to tell you who that was. So,
right.
You know, that was my beginning, and I trained at Vince's for 12 years.
Wow, that's what an amazing beginning. So were you there the day that Arnold came into Vince's gym?
Absolutely.
Wow. Tell me about that.
Well, he walked in the door, obviously, and I remember everybody kind of gravitating towards the door, and he pulled, he had a golf shirt on, you know, with a collar, and he pulled up the sleeve and hit a bicep, a peak shot, and, you know, everybody, you know, went, wow. But even though we were spoiled by Larry, I'm pretty sure that in the arm department, even though Arnold had beautiful, Joe Gold used to tell me that Arnold had beautiful muscles. And he did. He really and truly did. Round, sweeping, if you remember the movie Conan. I mean, we were spoiled. Larry had, you know, arms to die for. That was my first impression. Heavy Austrian accent.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when you're in Austria, you speak German. But anyway, that was my first meeting. And, you know, the rest. I was there when Larry trained in 65. Historically, he was the first Mr. Olympia. And then he competed again in 66, won both contests, and then promptly retired.
Yeah, yeah. Did you hear the conversation between Vince and Arnold when Arnold went up and told him who he was, and Vince had his response, his famous response?
My recollection was that he came in the evening.
Okay.
And Vince wasn't there. I don't know if you I'm sure you remember Dan Mackey, right?
Yeah, sure.
Dan Mackey worked the evening shift.
Okay.
So after Vince was finished insulting everybody from 8 in the morning till 4:30, Dan Mackey came in and took over. So I'm pretty sure Dan was there.
Okay.
And one thing I think your people, your listeners will love is that across the street in Studio City, was a Sizzler, and a Sizzler was like a poor man's steakhouse.
Yeah.
But every day for lunch, Vince went across the street and had a hamburger patty with cottage cheese and coffee.
Okay.
That became kind of our staple place to get protein. And you know, just a mile or two away were the TV studios, Universal, Sony, Columbia. And so, you know, we had there working out Robert Blake, Clint Eastwood, Robert Tessier. Remember Robert Tessier?
Yeah, he always played the bad guy, yeah.
Right, and he was a Hell's Angel. And I remember when I finally scraped up enough money to buy a Triumph Bonneville, I came to the gym so proud, and I went and showed it to him. And he kind of, you know, gave me one of those looks and says, "We carry those things in our pipes." So it was an interesting crew, I'll tell you that. Michael Landon was there, too.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know Robert Tessier was a Hell's Angel. I remember him always playing the bad guy in the movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think he went around bragging about it, but for sure, he was one bad dude.
Yeah, he looked like it. Right. What did you learn from Vince about training? Because I'm sure he instructed you on the right way to train.
You know, it's funny, but I never saw him say a peep to Larry about training, ever. And I remember, you know, he had this funny way about him. He wore a long sleeve sweatshirt and matching sweatpants and a huge lifting belt. And he walked around like a conductor of an orchestra, and he'd sit on a bench and cross his legs, and he would pontificate. He always had some theory. On the wall in his gym, he must have had 10 or 12 printouts, 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper with desiccated liver and the study about the three groups of rats and how the ones that took liver swam longer than the other ones. And, the egg diet, cream, you know, he had a 10, 8, 6, 15 was his rep scheme.
Okay.
Six sets of six. You know, he there was no such thing as a squat in that gym. The only thing you could get away with doing squats on the Smith machine if he wasn't around. But
right.
we had an early 1940s a hack slide machine from some old Vic Tanney, you know, in New York or Toronto, and a calf machine, but and no leg curl at all there, none.
Really? Wow.
So, you know, the idea, you know, Samir, for instance, has an amazing lower back. Arnold had a good lower back. Zane had a good lower back. They had a different upbringing than I did because they were squatting and they were deadlifting and they were, I was more, you know, if you look at my physique, it's pretty close to Vince's. We had kind of that same look. And I remember, John, one time I went over to Bill Pearl's gym in Pasadena because we were going to guest pose at one of his shows. And I remember him saying, you know, Steve, and he meant well by it. He was training Clinton Byerly, Dave Johns. But he said, Steve, your back looks like it's in a cast. And I said, well, I'm gonna have to work on that. So in a way, you know, with the wide grip dips, what I learned from Vince, one of the famous times I had with Vince, he came up to me one time when I was doing something wrong, and I don't remember what it was, a movement he didn't like. He came up to me and he said, if I had your frame, I'd be famous. Now quit screwing around and do your dips like this. But what I learned from Vince was his idea that the body was like a diamond and that as a bodybuilder, you were etching different facets. So we worked lateral head of the deltoid, not the frontal. We worked the lateral head of the tricep, the sweep of the thigh, the inner calf, the upper pec.
Yeah.
So he was all about, you know, creating an illusion and getting the most you possibly could get with the body that you had. Now, Larry Scott was narrow. He was not wide. He was half of what Don Holworth was. But, John, he had deltoids that, I mean, you look at him and you could not believe what you saw. I don't think anybody has ever had, even in the Olympia this year, has ever had the quality and the size of the deltoid or the biceps that Larry Scott had.
Wow, that's so amazing.
We learned, and it was a pretty serious time. You know, there wasn't a lot of talking. The gym kept moving. You know, once in a while, Joe Weider would show up, and, you know, Gene Mose with his 2 1/4 Hasselblad and shoot pictures of Larry. But it was a pretty serious training gym. And in a way, we weren't competing with goals because, you know, it was in Santa Monica. And they had their crew and we had ours and we had Larry Scott. And that kind of put, I think, Vince's on the map, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I have to go back to what you said before. You said Larry was doing presses, like the rotating presses, right, with the dumbbells, and he'd start with the 100s and go down to 10s.
Yeah, he'd do a set maybe with the 15s or 20s. Then he'd walk down the rack, and he'd clean the 90s. Or I think the heaviest we had was 105. And he'd do his set. Then he'd set them back. Then he'd grab the 90s, set them back. Then grab the 85s, set them back. And he went all the way down. And Larry did not train more than an hour. He was in, you know, shoulders, biceps, triceps, calves, out.
Yeah.
Chest, back, thighs, out. We had a little one man or two man sauna. After the workout, he'd sit in the sauna and take a shower, put on his velour, and out he went. So we didn't have long-term workouts.
Yeah.
We trained 6 days a week. Monday, Wednesday, Friday was one routine. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, was the other, and the concept was to go down to the beach and pose and get sun on Sunday and rest.
Yeah. Wow. Now, Steve, what was your physique like? Because one thing you were really famous for back in the late 70s, I remember this, was you had one of the first before and after pictures for your ad. And you were big, bulky, almost like a football player in the before picture. And then in your after picture, you were really symmetrical and ripped, and you were doing that tricep shot.
Right. When I was a senior in high school, I weighed about 185. I could bench press 300 for 10 reps.
Wow.
And I was into working out. And then in one of those trips to Hollywood, to the Cahuenga magazine rack, I saw a story about John Randall. And I went, wow, that guy went up to 230? No, 285. He went up to 320. And
wow.
Then lost a bunch of weight and won the NABBA Universe. So maybe I was just a closet eater, and I said, hey, wouldn't it be funny to get up to 300 and think of all the good food you could have? And,
right.
You know, spoken by me, I was on a diet for half my life. But anyway, I copied John Randall. I got up to 285, and when you weigh that much, all the weights are light for you because you've got an extra 100 pounds on you. And
yeah.
So I went up to 285 with lots of grilled cheese sandwiches and, you know, I mean, did not intelligently, but just ate and ate and ate and ate, made myself big and strong. And then figured if I lost 100 pounds or 90 pounds, my muscles would be bigger because I was using heavier weights. I'd get
right.
rid of the fat between the skin and the muscle. And there you go. I was cut.
Yeah, that was always an amazing before and after, because you look like a totally different body type. You almost look like an endomorph in the first picture and more ectomesomorph in the second picture.
Well, it wasn't my idea. One of the characters from Vince's was Rio H. Blair, the nutritionist.
Yeah, wow, okay.
Rio was a real case. He worked or had something to do with Ovaltine, the powder that you mix with milk in Chicago. And then he somehow ended up in L.A., and he had this house in Hollywood with white carpet, white walls, and mirrors everywhere. And he made, and I've never seen anything even close, the best supplement. I mean, his iron capsules, you could literally pick up with a magnet. He had encapsulated, desiccated liver. B-complex,
mm-hmm.
you could smell from a block away. And, of course, his wonderful, wonderful mother's milk. Protein that we mixed with raw cream, peaches, and coconut, and ended up losing our six packs. But when his stuff was expensive, and
yeah.
so the whole idea for us guys starting out at Vince's was we'd go up, talk to Rio, and say, "Okay, I'll sign this. Now, can I have my supplements?" And so he says, "Yeah, we're going to do a story about you. You're going to lose another 30, 40 pounds, and we're going to do the before and after and blah, blah, blah."
Great.
And so he was the one that came up with the idea. And,
okay.
you know, that, and I didn't know it at the time, but I'm sure there are thousands of people, and I'm not saying this like I'm full of myself, but there are many, many, many people that saw that before and after and thought, hey, if that guy can do it, so can I. And
yeah.
maybe they didn't become Mr. Wonderful, but at least they saw that you could go from point A to point B. And so that's pretty much how I went from, what do you call a guy in the middle? Is a mesomorph, right?
Mesomorph, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
I was always a mesomorph, but I went to be an endomorph and then come back to the mesomorph with bigger muscles and less fat. So that was kind
yeah.
of the concept.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid when I saw that ad, and I never really saw an ad like that before. It was amazing that you made such a remarkable change, because they didn't really have the before and after pictures back then, you know?
No, and John Randall was from London.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he won one NABBA Pro Universe, I believe. He had a great vacuum. He was famous for doing barbell pullovers, which is kind of
yeah.
old, out of the, you know, the past exercise. Nobody does anymore. But I think, you know, and then Joe Weider, you know, he's the ultimate marketer. He got one sniff of that before and after, and that's all she wrote, you know.
So when was your first contest then, Steve?
I'm guessing now I'm a freshman in college.
Okay.
And I'm thinking it might have been Mr. L.A.
Okay.
And I think I won that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the summer, there was a Mr. Venice Beach or a Mr. Muscle Beach.
Okay.
And then after that, there was Mr. California, which I was absolutely white. If you can imagine a white guy with absolutely no tan whatsoever, the contest was, and we didn't have, you know, Rio Blair had this weird stuff that you could paint on, but and we didn't have the benefit today of spray tan.
Yeah.
But anyway, I lucked out, and when I look at the pictures from that, I shake my head. I look like a ghost. but then after the California, then, you know, more articles, and then from that point, you know, I think I became serious. I was.
Oh, you were.
Teacher. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Sort of like Frank Zane.
Well, exactly like Frank Zane, and Frank was an amazing. I don't remember how I met him. I think he might. I don't know. Maybe through Joe or whatever. But mm-hmm. Frank had a job when Frank was training. For the 77 Olympia, he and I trained together that year.
Oh, really? Wow.
We trained at Vince's, and we trained at World Gym when it was on Main Street.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then we also that summer made the movie Sagan.
Yeah, I remember that. That's right.
It, you know, it's still in some can somewhere, but I learned an amazing amount from him. We both that year did well. I won the world championships in Acapulco.
Yeah.
He won his first of three Mr. Olympias.
Tell me about that movie, Sagan, because I totally forgot about that. But when you mentioned that, I remember you and Roger were both in that, and that was Frank's movie, or he was right. The star of the movie, and that was supposed to be, I don't know, something that was going to be released, but it never really was. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we filmed it outside of the San Fernando Valley, about a half hour from Vince's gym, about an hour from Gold's in the Tahunga Mountains. And we went there on Saturday. And, you know, it was definitely done with the minimum amount of cost. The director, his last name was Piyun, I think Pyun. And he went on to make a lot of good movies.
Really?
But we went there and we filmed and we had fun and we were all hungry because the contests were coming up in August and September.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just had a hoot. I remember one time I was standing waiting for my close-up and I was really trying to split my thighs for the shot. And Frank gave me a hard time in front of everybody. He says, "Hey, quit flexing your thighs." But we had a lot of fun, and it just, you know, who knows? I made a Gatorade commercial one time where I played a gladiator who came down the stairs after, you know, killing five lions, an elephant, and five bad guys.
Right.
Took off my helmet, opened a thing of Gatorade, and half of it went down my face and chest. And the director, that was an expensive commercial back then, $100,000, and the director was also the director. Or the camera director of the first Alien movie, so you know I was already counting the money, and it never happened. It never happened.
Oh, really?
The most money I ever made from a commercial was I made a Kool-Aid commercial, where I'm doing bench presses in a gym, and all of a sudden this big container, you know, the picture of Kool-Aid with the smile on it.
Yeah,
crashing through the wall, through the ceiling, and I dropped the bar, and I think the kid said, "Hey, our friend is." I said, and then somebody helped me with the bar, and I said, "Yeah, your friend is cool," and they said, "Yeah, our friend is Kool-Aid." But that commercial played on Saturday morning cartoons for a year.
Okay.
On the networks. So that was a good one. That was a really good one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you got into the movie since your father was also involved in the movie. He's a stuntman.
Yeah, one time I made a McDonald's commercial when they went to having prepackaged salad. So we went, we filmed it. There was a tall, thin woman, a short, fat guy, all different, like a Star Wars collection of people. And of course, I played the bodybuilder, and everybody's reaching over everybody to grab a tomato or, you know, salad dressing or croutons. And then the whole concept, of course, was go to McDonald's. It's already packaged for you. My hat's off to Arnold. He did very well.
Yeah, exactly. One of the only ones. What was that? What was Sagan about? Was that like a superhero type movie?
Yeah, kind of like, you know, it was kind of ninja because the director was Japanese.
Okay.
And we were like ninja warriors fighting everybody in the forest. That's kind of what it was.
Okay. Okay.
Joe did an article on it. It was in one of the Muscle.
Yeah, that's how I remember seeing it. I remember, I don't know if it was in Muscle Mag International or Weeders Magazine, but I remember seeing the pictures and you guys were all dressed up.
You know, speaking of Muscle Mag, Robert Kennedy was an amazing human being.
Yeah, I got the chance to know Robert also. I really liked him.
He liked my physique.
Mm-hmm.
He loved Reeves. He liked Zane. Wilfred Doubles. I think he liked Robert Nalon's physique. He liked my physique. And he helped me organize and sponsored me to the NABBA Universe in 77.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. I didn't know that.
And I remember maybe 10 years ago running into Louis at the gym in Venice.
Uh-huh.
And he came up to me and he said, "Have you heard about Bob?" And I said, "What?" He said, "He's got lung cancer."
Mm-hmm.
And he's about ready to pass. So I said, "Louis, let me have his phone number." He called me, gave me the phone number. I called up there that morning and spoke to his wife. He was at home on hospice and all kind of morphine to survive before the inevitable. And she said, "You know, he's in the other room." And all of a sudden, she said, "Wait, he's here." He didn't know I was on the phone. He came out, he grabbed the phone. And I said, "Hey, Bob, it's Steve. I just wanted to let you know that I love you and that I send you all my energy and, you know, my best wishes." And then he always called me Stevie. He says, "You know, Stevie, thank you for the good wishes. And, you know, you always had a body that everybody liked." And I said, "Well, thank you. Thank you for including me and sponsoring me and being as supportive as you were." And then, of course, you know, a couple of days. And, you know, he never smoked a cigarette. It was some kind of airborne whatever that got to his lungs. So,
yeah.
He was a wonderful man.
That was like Sean Perrine, who died a year ago. And he was the editor-in-chief of Muscle and Fitness magazine. Same thing. Guy was total health fanatic. I think early 50s. Always lean and ripped, and died of lung cancer. Didn't even know he had it, and then by the time they diagnosed it was too late, and he died a couple months later.
You know, life is short.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy to be 70. I had throat cancer about 14 years ago.
Oh, no kidding.
By a virus, HPV. I went through chemo and radiation. I had hepatitis C that I picked up during the Vietnam War when they used not the most sterile needles to give you your inoculations. So I've had a couple of bullets that I had to dodge, and I'm very humble about that. Now, Sean, I wanted to ask you something.
Okay.
I have a couple of ideas that I was going to share with you that I learned in my 50 years of working out, if you were interested.
Sure, absolutely.
Even though I respect the fact this is your interview, I just thought there might be a couple things that would help your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Number one, I think it's always better to have a training partner.
Okay.
I never was in better shape than 77 when I trained with Frank Zane. I remember doing close grip bench press at Vince's with 185, maybe 5 or 6 reps. And, you know, I was about ready to put the bar back. And he said, "Oh, no." And so, you know, his hands went under the bar and, you know, I did 4 more.
Yeah.
So I learned how important, even if your training partner is a beginner, just the fact that you do a set, he does a set. You do a set, he does a set. And you develop a certain rhythm.
Yeah.
And then plus, I'm a big believer in forced reps. And I saw that DVD that you did with Samir working your back doing the leverage row.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's a tough one to do forced reps with. But I believe that if a person has an opportunity to have a training partner, you're better off than training alone.
I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Number two, I believe in working opposing muscles. For instance, a curling motion barbell, dumbbell incline, supersetted with pushdowns.
Okay.
Seated dumbbell press, supersetted with lat machine pulldown. Dumbbell bench press, supersetted with barbell rows. I think there's something to be said about kind of the yin and the yang. It doesn't have to be push-pull. For instance, leg extensions, leg curls. I just think working opposing muscles is better than, let's say, doing a set of dumbbell presses with 50-pound dumbbells and then walking and doing a set with 30s and then 20s and then 10s. It's all good, but I happen to like the opposing approach.
Okay.
Also, you, I'm sure you know a million different kinds of split routines. And I do too. Frank used to have us do chest, shoulders, tricep, back, bicep, forearm, you know, push, pull.
Yeah.
But I today really like the idea of doing upper body one day and lower body the next. Upper body, lower body, upper body, lower body. And what that does, and, you know, Steve Reeves did the whole body three times a week.
Yeah.
But I happen to like the upper body, lower body, even though that would be a hard sell to today's competitors because they don't think they can do enough for the rear deltoid if you're working the whole body. But
And
I happen to think maybe there's a little bit of overtraining too. Number four, and by the way, you know, free advice is worth what you pay for it. These are just observations that I have made.
50 years of training,
Maybe on a good day I could squat 405, maybe.
Okay.
But, you know, your knees, I still squat. I think I use maybe now 115 or 135.
Okay.
But what I've learned is to keep my knees from moving forward and to keep my knees and my lower leg from the knee to the ankle 90 degrees to the ground. So my knees do not wander forward over my ankles when I squat. I now sit back.
Right.
So I'm using my quads and my glutes to take the pressure off around the knee area. That's been very helpful to me. And I learned that from a guy by the name of T.R. Goodman, who trains the L.A. Kings and the hockey players. He trained Laird Hamilton, the professional big wave surfer. And in other words, with hockey players, John, they don't care about bigger, faster, stronger. Maybe they care about faster, but they don't care about bigger, stronger. What they want is to stay on the ice. And so T.R. Goodman has come up with movements that help old timers like myself to keep being mobile. And so therefore, I would recommend all your people, your listeners, your followers, to maybe squat in front of a mirror so they can try to minimize the knees moving forward as they squat.
Okay. Now, how do you do that, Steve? Do you sit on something or do you do a Smith machine?
You practice by just holding something and then you work on, because we all think we're going to fall over backwards. All of
us. Yeah.
And us guys, we all walk around like linebackers. We're bent at the waist. And we're looking forward, you know, like we're going to tackle somebody.
Right.
So posture is a huge thing. But and I'm sure you do it properly. Like, I think I saw you doing hack slides the other day.
You know,
that's an easy way to just keep your eye on your knee in relationship to your ankle to start developing. In other words, you got to use your butt more. And, you know, Vince is probably turning over in his grave right now because the whole concept was to do sissy squats or hack squats because you didn't want a big ass when you were competing. You know, you wanted to look like Reeves. So that's something. And you can just practice by squatting and looking to the left or right and looking at the mirror and see that your knees don't move forward.
Okay.
As far as reps, let's just say that I put my hand in your hand and I push your hand to you. You push your hand to me and back and forth and back and forth with equal tension. What I've learned is to try to keep equal tension on reps. So when you curl, you press, you feel it up, you feel it back, you feel it up. You feel it back, and I believe, and I learned this from T.R. Goodman, that you should think of yourself almost like the little engine that could. You know, in other words, when I'm doing seated dumbbell press, it sounds like this. So I'm pumping, in other words, pumping. Yeah. When T.R. Goodman trained Lou Ferrigno for the Masters Olympia, that's what he taught Louis, and Louis never looked better for that contest.
Right.
Was the idea that you pump. You don't cheat, but you just kind of pump it. You kind of pump it. You have to extend, and you have to stretch, but it's a kind of a pumping, equal tension kind of feel with your reps.
Okay.
Stretching. John, I'm as flexible as a 2x4. And so now, before I work leg, you know what rotator cuff exercises are, right?
Sure, yeah.
Now I'm doing a lot of shoulder joint work freehand, laying on the bench. And the same thing with my hips, because those, as you get older, and even the young guys, you know, bench pressing, or Michael Hearn works out in the gym, and I think he's doing incline barbell press with 455 or some crazy number.
Right.
By keeping your hips and your shoulders well flexed and mobile, I've learned that, and of course I know you know what rotator stuff. I was just trying to make sure we were on the same page because some people do it with a straight arm. Some people do it with a bent arm. You know, you can do that with a cable almost. But, We now spend a good amount of time before lower body doing all kinds of hip rotator cuff movements and the same thing before upper body with shoulder rotator kind of movements. And knock on wood, I have perfect shoulders. I mean, not perfect, but pain-free shoulders and pain-free hips.
Wow, that's amazing, Steve. 70 years old now, after all the years of training.
Yeah. Now, your listeners, I think a good portion are probably competitors. And one thing that I learned from Frank Zane, one of many things, was that posing was an excellent way to get in shape near the last month or so.
Okay.
So, and what he taught me to do was to hold each pose maybe for 30 seconds with a relaxed face. And you'd be surprised how going through your posing routine, let's say just before you go to bed so that you don't, you know, go to sleep on a full stomach. But that I found that by posing, you definitely got more ripped. Definitely.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people come up to me to the gym and they say, hey, what are you posing? What do you think? How should I do it? And I said, look, just go to YouTube and watch Ed Corney pose to I Did It My Way by Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. One other thing I liked about Frank said, and I just heard an interview with him recently. I forget who he was talking to. But he said when he was getting ready for a contest, he would get pictures taken every week in the same spot, same time of the day. His wife would go outside and they'd take the pictures outside. So it'd be the same, pretty much the same lighting because it was the same time of the day.
That was number 10 on my list. And, you know, back in the day, he used to say, you know, Frank was not a man of a lot of words.
Yeah.
He said, take a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. And, you know, in those days, it was a 35 millimeter. There was no such thing as an iPhone 8.
So you had to get them developed and everything.
But it definitely helped when you could take a proof sheet. And, you know, you'd get the guys that Gene Mose and Bill Reynolds, mm-hmm. and I can't think of the other really good photographer,
Artie
Joe.
Artie Zeller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other guy has a website, Classic Physique. But you learned a lot looking at proof sheets. You say, hey, you know what? My serratus doesn't look good. You know what? My lower abs are a little bit fat there. So photographs, and that way, you know, the competitor becomes more in tune with his body, and he mm-hmm. starts looking at himself. Also, I don't know how it is now, but when I did my best, I was in shape a week before the contest.
Right.
Then you would kind of mellow out, maybe even try to use a little bit heavier weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, honestly, John, before prejudging on Saturday, I'm pretty sure my breakfast was a half a grapefruit, scrambled eggs, and toast and coffee.
Okay.
So that was, in other words, there was no carb fest, no trying to worry about, and yes, I took steroids. But I think when you took 3 Dianabol a day and a shot a week, you didn't have to worry that much about water retention.
Right,
so
right.
We were pretty much ready a week before. You'd do posing. You know, Joe would bug you, come on down and let's take some pictures. And, you know, we'd take our pictures. And then there was no big change. And then maybe you can tell me why after the contest and after having a party filled with spaghetti and everything you haven't eaten in 6 weeks, the next day, Sunday, you look the best you ever looked.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Steve, tell me a little bit about, well, first of all, I appreciate you telling me all that about the training. That was great. But tell me a little bit about training with Frank in 1977, because I just did an interview with your friend Richard Baldwin. And he said when he saw Frank training in the gym, it was like he was in a zone. He was like a Zen master. And it was really amazing to see how focused he was and how concentrated he was. So what was I'm sure you learned a lot from training with him that year.
His instruction. Now, how did we get together? I'm pretty sure Joe Weider introduced us. And Frank was now training with Bill under the tutelage of Bill Kazmaier during the office and the powerlifter. And you know,
finished
wrap on Frank was size.
Yeah.
And so once Frank had the size, then he and I trained together. But my instructions from Frank were to quietly, before I fell asleep, to go over my routine the next day, you know, my lifting routine, so mm-hmm. that I would think, I'm going to turn my little fingers up with the incline curl. I'm going to make sure I touch all 4 dumbbells on the bench dumbbell bench press. So we went over our routine in our mind prior to going in the next day. Tennis players do that now. They go over what they're going to do prior to their exercise routine or the game or whatever. So one of the things, and so the zone. He was already mapped. He already knew what he was going to do that day in the gym the night before. Because, you know, Frank is a big time. He believes that the brain and the mind are the most important organs in the body in terms of training. They're not muscles, but, you know, think it and do it. What you think, you will become. So, there wasn't a lot of talk at all when we trained together. And secretly, I always tried to use more weight, but I don't think I always did. but no, we were dead serious and no conversation with anybody. And at either at Vince's or at world on Main Street, it was strictly from that point to the stage. So, you know,
yeah,
it wasn't a party atmosphere. There was one bathroom, no women training. It was pretty serious in both locations.
Yeah.
And what I learned from him, forced reps, and he had his split, you know, chest, shoulders, triceps, calves, back, biceps, forearms, thighs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But maybe accurately back, biceps, forearms, come back in the afternoon and work thighs. Chest,
okay.
Biceps, yeah. And then come back and do abs and calves.
Okay. Yeah.
Or twice a day, but push pull.
Twice a day. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Push pull, and then of course posing, and you know, he was a big believer in a vacuum. I wasn't that great at it, but I kind of got away with the frontal section by having decent abs. But he was focused. He studied everything, and one thing he did very nice for me is he had a program. Every week he went to, during summer when he was off, he went to a different high school every day in the LA Unified School District and did a demonstration on
how. Oh, really?
So, yeah. And he handed that to me. And so I got an extra workout in all that summer, you know, doing a set with 135 bench press, bent over rows, military press. I might have even done curls with that. And so I went through a one exercise per body part routine around the LA City schools.
Oh, that's nice. Huh. Now, when you were training with Frank that summer, did you think he was going to win the Olympia? Because I know a lot of publicity was on Robbie and I think Lou also, because Lou was supposed to go in the show.
I don't think we cared about anybody.
Really? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Because when the 77 Olympia came, if I'm not mistaken, each guy stood behind a curtain and you just saw his outline.
Silhouette. Outline. Right.
Thank you, silhouette. And even with just the silhouette, you could tell that Frank was going to win.
Yeah.
The day before the 77 Olympia, he told me that he did 10 reps with 315 in the bench press, probably
really?
Weighing 185.
Wow. No kidding. That's amazing. I wouldn't think of him that being that strong, you know?
No, he was. And he was a power lifter and a squatter. And that's why
he had
a temperamental lower back, but that's why he had a wonderful lower back. You know, you don't see any shots of my back anywhere. I was very good at hiding it, either that or the photographer thought, get it, man. The word was out on me. But he had a really good lower back, and based on him being a power lifter. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Frank was from Pennsylvania, where Bob Hoffman and York were, York, PA. And so that was kind of how he got into lifting, was as a power lifter and an Olympic lifter.
Okay. Yeah. Steve, tell me about that Mr. World that you won, the IFBB Mr. World in 1977, that same summer. And you won the middleweight class. You said that was in Acapulco.
Yes. I went down there. I'll never forget. I got to LAX. I think we flew Aero Mexico or something. And mind you, this is 77, and it's in August, and it's 6 weeks before the Mr. Universe. So
okay.
I get to the plane and get on the plane, and there's Pete Grimkowski, two seats forward. And I'm not kidding you. He bought a carrot cake from Vons, a whole carrot cake, and he was taking chunks out of it and eating it. As we flew, and Pete, I love you, but I tell the truth. And then he unscrew a jar of Diana Ball and swig, you know, how many tablets, I don't know, put them back. So, and then as we got closer to Acapulco, the cabin door for the pilots opened, and I swear to you, they were drinking beer. So we get to Acapulco, and by the way, I was a goody two-shoes. I brought broiled chicken and grapefruit, and that's right. What I ate. And we get to Acapulco, and my dear friend Kent Keene was there, Ray Manzer was there, you know, the crowd. And I kind of kept to myself because, mind you, I'm training, you know, with Vince and the gym I opened, the Valencia Health Club, with Harvey Keith. So I really wasn't buddies with those guys.
Yeah.
We checked into the hotel, and a very good physique, Andreas Kaling, was there.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to you before, when I won the California, my skin was pure white.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Andreas was absolutely in tip-top shape. I was in light heavy, which is 90 kilos, 198.
Okay.
And poor Andreas, he was going to be my competition, and he got out in the Acapulco sun and got sun poisoning.
Oh, wow.
And he blew up like the Michelin Man.
No kidding. Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was serious. So anyway, we have the contest, and they call my name as the winner. And believe it or not, I had a perfect score. I think we had natural, compulsories, and freestyle.
Okay.
And I had whatever it was, 100 in each one. And Pete Grimkowski in the heavyweight had a few, maybe he was 198. So I not only won my class, but the overall.
Wow, and that's great.
And I remember when they called my name, I really was emotional. I had to hold back the tears because I had never, you know, heck, I flew out of the country and I won a contest. And gee, I don't think I'm in love with myself, and I've always been humble and thankful. And I appreciate what I've done, but, you know, it wasn't a foregone conclusion. And I remember going back to Weider's office and doing photographs, and somebody had said that Steve Davis won his class in the overall, and I think Pete was going to burn down Weider Enterprises. he wasn't happy with that.
Right.
And then 6 weeks later was the Pro Universe, and I was in great shape.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that flying from L.A. nonstop to London, that I would dehydrate.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, I came in about 8 pounds light, and I was...
Wow.
That's on me. But I was definitely the most ripped guy in the show, had the best crowd reaction. But I was a little light, and so Tony Emmett was first, Serge Nubre was second, and I was third. The next day on Sunday, after I ate for about 6 hours, it was a lot different. But whatever, that you live and learn.
Yeah, yeah. How did you think? What did you feel about Tony and Serge Nubre? I remember that was kind of a controversial call because Serge Nubre, of course, was a legend, and then Tony looked at his best ever, probably, and he beat out Serge Nubre.
Well, Tony was in shape.
Serge,
you know, I don't know. I had no idea the politics at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just went there, and I remember Bob Kennedy met me, and he was very happy with what he saw. And you know, I mean, I had cross durations in my glutes before that was, you know, before that
before
was
anybody
happening.
Did. Yeah.
But I, like I said, I was, you know, your body's 70% water, and you know, John, the water level can have a huge effect on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So so anyway, I don't know about Tony. Tony is not as pleasing a physique as Serge Nubre. We all know
right.
that.
Right.
And I love Serge. After the contest in London, we went to Paris. I was his guest there, and then I went to Germany and did a couple of photo shoots. So I spent a little bit of time in Europe, and You know, it was great going to the European pharmacies because they had it was like a candy store. The idea of a prescription didn't exist. I mean, they had a chemical called ATP, which helps your muscles contract. They had thiomucase and triacana, which Serge lived on because that made you in shape. And then they had steroids that had built into them a little bit of estrogen, so it was balanced, you know, so you didn't get a bitch kid. No, it was called Propofol. And back in the day, and this is absolutely accurate, after the shows, I loaded up my suitcases and flew home with all of it, and nobody said a word. You do that today, and you're going to be in Alcatraz.
Yeah, no kidding. Arnold was at that show also handing out trophies.
Yeah. I can tell you that, you know, and I understand that, you know, you're natural, and I commend you for that. I remember I came up with Vince, and Vince said that bodybuilding is becoming a drug subculture. So my years in the beginning were zero steroids, and then it wasn't until I started competing that I used, you know, 3 Dianabol a day, maybe 4 a day, and a shot a week.
Yeah.
But I'm still in shape. I have my body part. I never abused it, and I can. And we both know, God bless them both, Mike and Ray Mensur, some became addicted to steroids and would not train unless they were on steroids. And when they were on steroids, they figured if this is good, more is better, and I can train less. So, And today I couldn't even tell you. I hear insulin, I hear growth. I wanted to take, HGH because I heard it was good for your joints.
Right.
And I had throat cancer. I didn't want to risk, you know, God forbid that I have some little piece of cancer somewhere. And the human growth hormone made that grow. But, clearly I grew up in physical culture and it was all about, we said diet was 99% of it. So, yes, I took them, but I didn't rely on them. And when I retired, I still have a good physique.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always interesting to hear the stories about what the guys did back then, because I'm sure it was much, much, much less. And it wasn't as much of a drug culture as it is today. And I know the insulin and the growth hormone wasn't even around back then.
No. And, you know, and then anyway. There was horse equipoise and there was all kind of stuff out there, but I got in my best shape just with a moderate dose maybe 6 weeks before a show, and that was it.
Wow. And then you were off the rest of the year pretty much.
Well, then you took some kind of shot that helped your testicles start firing again. I forgot all that stuff, but
HCG probably.
HCG, right. HCG,
right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I'll tell you this. When I went through chemo and radiation, I was suicidal. And
really?
I went through 2 months of radiation. And, you know, I had throat cancer, so the radiation beams were in my wheelhouse. And after about a month and a half, and I went 5 days a week for 2 months for a half hour session, I was suicidal, and I called my social worker at UCLA and I said, "Hey, I need help, man. I spend all day deciding, do you put the gun in your mouth or under your chin? How do you do it?" And they said, "Steve, you better come in." So I went to the shrink and he looked at me and he says, "I know what's wrong with you." So they took my blood test, and believe it or not, my testosterone level, which was normally, after many, many years, 700 or 800 naturally.
Wow.
My doctor used to go, "Wow." But when I was through chemo and radiation, it was 0.15.
Oh,
not even 1%. Not even 1.
Geez.
So for the last 15 years, I've been taking I give myself a shot every week of 100 milligrams of testosterone to keep my levels normal. And the other thing that happened was that my thyroid shrunk to about half size. So every day I take Synthroid and Cytomel. And that's allowed me to, you know, streamline my hormones.
How do you feel on the testosterone now, Steve? Much, much better, I'm sure.
My level now is 800, 900, which is good.
Yeah, yeah, and, that's perfect.
You know, I do dumbbell bench presses with 35 pounds, dumbbells.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of cartilage left in my knees or my elbows. So I train intelligently. And, you know, there's times when I won't take a shot for a month just because I want my own body to come back.
But
we used to joke about women, you know, that went from zero to crazy, or guys that when they were 50 or 60, all of a sudden had a blonde girlfriend and a red Corvette. There is something to be said about hormones, and that's very, very important. So I think what I am now is somebody who's balanced with my hormones, and that's allowed me to be, you know, healthy.
Speaking of being in shape, you were talking about your glutes being striated. I always remember you had those striated triceps.
Right. That was by doing tricep extensions and flexing my triceps at the bottom of the rep.
Okay.
Also, you know, my hero was Steve Reeves, and we both have calves. We both had calves. We both rode our bicycles. I was an avid bicycle rider, not like Cal Scalak, who's become a top racer. And I have horses, and Steve raised Morgan horses. So a lot of it, you know, a lot of it just had to do with constant tension on the handlebars, riding my bike. I had a paper route for years.
Then
also at Vince's gym, when we did our tricep extensions, we kept the heel of our hand lower than our fingers so that when you went down, it put extra flex. You know, you can arch your palm, the back of your hand up towards your forearm and do a tricep extension. And if I'll bet you, your tricep feels like it's going to contract, and you have a Charlie horse. So that's how we train triceps. And you know, a lot of it has to do with your genetics. And I guess that was just something that I was lucky enough to have.
And Steve, you had the fortune of competing against Frank in the Mr. Olympia back in 1979. Frank's last Mr. Olympia win.
You call it the fortune. I had the distinct displeasure of following him on the stage.
You were right behind him.
I missed it. I was not in good shape, and I was off. And I remember that, you know, let's just pick a number. He was number 7. I was number 8. You know, I still did the silhouette thing and all that.
Yeah.
I walked out there, you could hear a pin drop. And, you know, thankfully, out of respect, the crowd gave me a little bit of acknowledgement at the end. But it definitely made me a better man following him on the stage in Columbus, Ohio.
That was probably his peak condition ever. That was probably the best he ever looked.
Anyway.
And you also did the Olympia in 81, right? The one Franco came back and won.
No, I was just in two of them. I don't remember. I know I was last the first year I entered, and then I was like 15th out of 20 the second time.
Okay, yeah.
So I was ahead of Mike Katz, ahead of, I think Ed Corney was 14th, I was 15th. Mike Katz, Ken Waller. So I had a little bit of redemption. But again, I started this off by saying you should have a training partner. You know, my wife and I at that time had opened a women's gym. And I was, you know, I was commuting. I was training on my own. I had, I split with Harvey Keith. So, you know, whatever. No excuses. It is what it is.
Yes.
It was a good experience, and it definitely built my courage, because you have no idea Have you been to the Memorial Auditorium in Columbus?
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw both of those shows.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it was shaking when Frank finished.
Yeah, I know. I know. You know.
So anyway, I survived that, and I'm still alive to talk about it.
Yeah, that's great. You and your wife, did you guys also do mixed pairs? I remember seeing that.
Yeah, we invented that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that when you brought brought her up.
You know, I'm married now 33 years to my second wife.
Wow, congratulations.
Who is a judge in Santa Monica. And by the way, for all your men out there that aren't married, the line I used to meet my wife 33 years ago was, I walked up to her at a gym and I says, "Does your boyfriend know how lucky he is?" And so all 33 right. years later, we made it. But that's when I met Bill Pearl, because we were guest posing at a show in Pasadena. But yeah, okay. We invented couples posing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I posed later with Heidi something or other that owned a yogurt place. And we were back east. I think Chris Dickerson was first and somebody else was second. Carlos Rodriguez, I think, was second.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With Gladys Portuguese, and then
Heidi
and myself were third. So get that. And I wrote a book way back when, Bodybuilding for Women.
Oh, really? What year was that, Steve?
75 or 6.
Way ahead of your time.
Right.
That's amazing.
I was motivated because I was up for the part of Tarzan with Bo Derek.
Oh, really?
John Derek.
No kidding.
John Derek invited me over to meet Bo, and we sat there in Chatsworth, and she made us cheese enchiladas, and you know, I couldn't keep my eyes off of her, but they gave it to another guy because he was like 6'3", and they wanted him to be taller than her. So
right.
Didn't, and I had a horse named Silver. I still have him now, who was slated to be Armie Hammer's when they did the remake of The Lone Ranger. He was going to be that horse, but Armie Hammer's taller than I am, and my horse is, you know, 15'3", which is medium size, so they used a different horse, so I guess I've been a couple inches short in both cases.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, that's great. Well, Steve, I want to thank you for joining us on the show. I know this was kind of a last-minute thing, and I appreciate you coming on. I really enjoyed all your stories, and I'd love to have you back on again one day to hear some more great stories, because you were really around during the great golden era of bodybuilding, and it sounds like you really met a lot of great guys and had a lot of great experiences for yourself.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Okay.
I hope the information has been helpful.
Absolutely.
And even today, the competitors will come up to me at Gold's, and I think you were there a while back. I trained.
Yeah, I was.
I train at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, so, really? Okay.
Yeah, I'm out before 6, and hopefully one day to meet you. But what I talk about, you know, working the lateral head of the tricep or the upper pec, and you know, kind of body sculpting. I find that the young people come up to me, and the guys in their 20s and 30s,
right,
come up to me and talk to me about that, because I think what we did then has implications now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was there in the morning a couple of days when I was out there. I was training with Phil Williams. He wanted to go early in the morning, like 4 o'clock.
He's a former competitor, right?
Yeah, he won the Nationals in 1985. So
he was a big time guy. I'm going to leave you with one question. See if you can get the answer.
All right.
Who, Mr. John Hansen, invented the preacher bench?
It wasn't Larry Scott.
No.
Was it? No. Okay.
No.
I don't know.
And you know it was at Vince's gym, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
When Vince was a dancer and an actor before he got weights. He worked out in a gym in Hollywood called Easton's Gym.
Okay.
And they're the ones that had the preacher bench.
Really?
And the spider bench. And the wide dips. So a lot of Vince Incorporated, and to show you what kind of guy Vince was, when Harvey and I were going to make a replica gym out in the Santa Clarita area, he said, bring your tape measure, copy everything you want.
Wow, that's great. No kidding. That's awesome. Yeah.
So anyway, that's just a little piece of nostalgia.
Yeah, a little piece of history.
I like your interviews. I've listened to them from time to time.
Oh, and, thank you.
You know, I appreciate what you do for the sport. And if there's anything I can do in the future, please don't hesitate.
All right, Steve. I'd love to have you back on again for sure.
Okay. Thank you very much, John.
All right, Steve. Thanks. Take care now.
You too. Bye.
All right. Bye. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank Steve Davis for coming on at kind of the last minute to do this interview. And I also want to thank Richard Baldwin, because Richard was the one who contacted Steve and got him to do the interview. So thank you to both of those guys. I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, of course, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I am off to Chicago, but I will be back next week for another interview at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So take care, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you then. Take care.